The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and do not necessarily reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a progressive-minded radio show about faith and action, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters. I'm Maria Johnson. Today, in what I hope will become an annual tradition, and in hopes of providing some relief from the news, we bring you an update about birds. Yes, birds. Birds are reasonably Catholic. The Holy Spirit is represented by a bird, and St. Francis famously preached to the birds. So preaching to us today on behalf of the birds will be Patrick Cummins, Executive Director of the Connecticut Audubon Society, and Frank Mantlick, volunteer birder extraordinaire, both of whom braved some fearsome weather on December 23rd to count the birds in their Audubon-designated area of Stratford and Milford, Connecticut. We'll be back in a moment with Patrick and Frank, but first, a reminder that WESU runs largely on listener support, and that means you. Please give what you can to support this amazing radio station, whose sole mission is to bring you programming that you can't hear anywhere else. In honor of Reasonably Catholic's fifth birthday, I'm asking listeners to donate any sum with a five in it. Thanks in advance for your help. Back after this with our bird episode.
Hello, this is Arthur Myers, and I'm very happy to participate in this effort to bring greater awareness of WESU to the area. During the week, if I can listen, I am especially interested in Reasonably Catholic because of its breadth of participation of various people. I was on it myself. On the weekend, I'm especially listening to some of the alternative music or music that I wouldn't ordinarily listen to, whether it's from different countries or certainly younger recording artists. Otherwise, during the week, if you're able to listen to it, you have Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, and those kinds of programs that are just plain broadening for anybody. And I urge you to both continue to listen and support WESU. Thank you.
Welcome, Patrick Cummins. Welcome back.
Thank you, Maria.
I'm hoping to make this an annual tradition.
That'd be cool.
You know, the birds deserve it.
Yeah, they do, and it's fun too. I mean, every year is completely different.
Exactly, and we're going to talk about this year and how completely different it was, to the point where I couldn't even get to where you were. But first, I need to note that you have rather a significant new title.
Yes. Back in July, I started at the Connecticut Audubon Society, which is an independent statewide organization. I formerly worked for Audubon Connecticut. I know it's confusing, but they're the state office of the National Audubon Society. And I was director of bird conservation, and now I'm the executive director at the Connecticut Audubon Society.
It sounds like a lot of serious responsibility.
It is. I'm the buck stops here. I'm responsible for the entire organization. Now we have more than 3,000 acres we protect in the state, and we got to be good stewards of that. And we have statewide conservation advocacy programs where we keep an eye on issues that may arise that affect bird conservation, either in a positive or a negative way. And we have seven centers around the state where we do environmental education, trying to open new eyes to nature and inspire people to get out there and conserve nature.
Were you already familiar with your Connecticut territory, or has there been a learning curve?
Oh, there's definitely been a learning curve. It's different responsibilities, it's broader. But I've lived in Connecticut my whole life. I've been involved in conservation here for more than 20 years, and some things don't change.
Yeah. Well,
in fact, I used to work at the Connecticut Audubon Society back in the 90s as a biological technician doing bird surveys along the coast of Connecticut. So in some ways, it's a homecoming for me.
You know, it's just safe to say you've given your whole life to birds.
Yeah, you know, it's something that I really care about, and birds and nature. And, you know, that's one difference between the two organizations is they're very focused on birds, and I want to have a little bit broader focus. So, yes, birds are a major focus of us in bird conservation, and birds are a great way to get people excited about nature. But there are other taxa, if you will, that are in need of our help. There are some endangered butterflies. There are declining species of butterflies. There are things like the New England cottontail rabbit. There are things like, the eastern timber rattlesnake, the box turtle, the wood turtle, the bog turtle, the spotted turtle. All of these animals are really having a hard time.
To say nothing of the bees.
Well, yeah, the decline of pollinators in general. So I feel like I have a little bit more freedom to focus on or to diversify my focus and work on conserving wildlife, not just birds. And it's all going to be for the benefit of birds. The bottom line is habitat.
Right.
That's the limiting factor for birds and for the other wildlife. So by making better habitat for, say, a spotted turtle, you're also making better habitat for birds as well. So I feel like I can have a more holistic approach to conservation, being able to set the agenda myself.
Well, congratulations to your new employers for making a wise choice.
Oh, thank you very much.
I can't think of anyone whose heart is more in it.
Yeah, it's what I care about. You know, I don't have to act sincere about our mission. It's my life.
Yeah. Well, there was a bit of bad news that made me think of you recently, and it had to do with Trump's rolling back some Obama-era regulations that pertain to birds.
Yeah, that's pretty troubling.
Why don't you sum it up for the listeners who may not know what we're talking about?
Sure. What they basically said is that for that incidental take of birds is not covered under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. If you
by take, you mean death?
By death of them. So let's say you put up a wind turbine in a bad location, and it ends up killing a lot of hawks and owls and eagles and other raptors. You're not going to be responsible or liable for that anymore.
Yeah.
It's only the willful harm of birds that they will prosecute under.
Hmm.
And it is complicated. I mean, birds get injured by things all the time, or killed by things. They fly into windows. They hit your car.
Yeah.
You know, if you're harvesting hay, there's going to be some incidental take of grassland birds. But the way the ruling was, there was some flexibility, and if something was not necessarily willful but negligent in some ways, it mm-hmm. could be covered under this. It gave some incentive, at least ability to negotiate with industry that may be harming large numbers of birds. So it's a serious issue. As a statewide organization now, as opposed to a national organization, there's not all that much we can do here in Connecticut because our elected officials are
already on board.
Right. You know, but we do partner quite a lot with national organizations, including National Audubon. We still have a great relationship with the people I used to work with. I'm going to be going down to D.C. in February and meeting with some of their national policy folks and talk about how some of the independent Audubons can help out with Audubon's national policy agenda. But, you know, there are a lot of groups covering it, including National Audubon Society.
Yeah. What to say? Let's talk about the bird count.
Yes.
That was some weather we had on December 23rd. My neighborhood was a sheet of ice, and the spirit was willing, but my caution kind of ruled the day. So I didn't get to come and tromp through the undergrowth with you guys. Bravo to you all who did. How many people showed up for the Christmas bird count in your Stratford-Milford area?
Well, in our area, let's see, it was one, two, three, four, five, six, I think six people.
That's and a pretty good showing.
Yeah, especially considering the weather. And some of us were also coming down from mid-state as well. I was meeting folks for breakfast at 6 a.m., so I got up a little earlier, and it was still raining, freezing rain out. And, yeah, it was kind of a sheet of ice, but with the studded snow tires, once I got out of my driveway, I was fine. So I got down there.
Where do you live, and, Patrick?
I live in Meriden.
Okay.
And, you know, so I got down to Stratford, and once I got, you know, to where I'd say orange or so, it was mostly just rain, not freezing rain anymore.
Oh, good.
And but it was a very unpleasant, windy, cold, wet day. So it was not the most fun to do a bird count in. And we missed, you know, we missed a lot of common birds overall on the count.
Now, I saw that email that listed the ones that you missed. And how do we know we missed them?
Well, because no one found any of them.
And normally we find them.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, there are people all out 7.5 mile radius for this count. It's a Stratford-Milford count. And overall in that count, you know, we missed some things you normally can easily find, like eastern bluebird, gray catbird are usually fairly regular along the coast.
Yeah.
We even missed cedar waxwing, which is, you know, it's a... I would have expected we actually would have gotten some cedar waxwings pushed down to the coast because of the ice that was on the berries inland.
Huh.
We missed Savannah sparrow, which is usually easy to find at Long Beach. We missed common grackle, which is usually, you know, there's usually a few of them around at the shore. Brown-headed cowbirds. Bald eagle we missed, which sounds strange, but they're usually pretty regular these days.
Wow.
I remember... In the old days, it was very hard to find bald eagles, but now they're pretty widespread. They've been an amazing comeback. Other ones like canvasback and horned grebe, we missed. I think that might have something to do with the fact that it had been warm and there's a lot of open water to our north. So a lot of those birds haven't come down yet. So it was sort of irony that you know, our main problem was it was cold and miserable. But we had the secondary problem of, you know, some birds may not have even arrived yet because it hadn't been cold and miserable enough.
Huh. Remind me of that special species that you were so glad to get a shot of last year.
Oh, that was the orange crown warbler. That was really cool.
Did you see any of those this year?
No, I mean, the real highlight this year was... Yeah, they were the snowy owls.
And, yeah, and you saw some.
Yeah, we did. This one bird, it's a young female. I call her Stormy, and she's beautiful. She's got a lot of black barring and a very healthy bird.
Are the pictures that you emailed to me of her?
Yeah, yeah.
Can I post them on the blog?
Yeah, absolutely.
She is. It's like she's posing for you. She gives you her profile.
Right. And, you know, I have a very, very powerful zoom camera. I use a Canon PowerShot, which I can get up to over 100x zoom with when I get into digital zoom. And so I wasn't as close as you might think to her. There's a lot of cropping involved. It was about 104x zoom, and then I digitally cropped from there.
How did you even find her? My goodness.
Well, she was sitting right out in the open. As snowy owls often do, and I saw her, and I was able to get to a location where I was somewhat sheltered. She hardly saw me, and I was able to just lay down in my belly and take a few shots, and then I, you know, crawled away and stood up again, and she was still there, and I went back to my car, and she was still there. I was able to get some decent shots while still keeping my distance.
Wow. Was that the highlight for you?
Oh, absolutely.
You are listening to a chat with expert participants in this year's Christmas Bird Count, the second such episode in what I hope will become an annual tradition, because the birds deserve it. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters. Back in a moment with more from Patrick Cummins, Executive Director of the Connecticut Audubon Society.
My name is Father John Baptist Pesch from Holy Family Monastery in West Hartford. I think this is a great contribution to what the Church is supposed to be at all times, but especially in our day when we're emphasizing more and more the Church as the people of God. It's a wonderful program, and I'm glad that Maria Johnson, she took the challenge up when she recognized that there were certain voices that were not giving the proper impression of the way Catholics should respond to the realities of life in the political and social order. I'm in favor of this, even though maybe sometimes I hear things that I don't really approve of. So what? I mean, nobody has a monopoly on what the Church is. I encourage you to really to support this by your prayers. We always say that and we mean it. But I also mean this, any kind of a sacrifice you can make to give to the program is well worth it. And I really hope that if I disturbed your conscience a little bit, I hope you'll make the most of it. Thanks a lot.
Well, what is it, besides that they're so beautiful, what is it about the snowy owl?
Well, you know, it's a very large bird. They're larger than a red-tailed hawk, and they're just stunning white and black. They range from almost pure white for an adult male to very heavily mottled black and white for young females.
And where are they coming from?
They're coming from the high Arctic. They nest up above the tree line in the Arctic.
Wow.
And they're long distance travelers. I mean, it's possible that some bird that was hatched up in Alaska could be down here for the winter.
Wow. Will they stay here, or are they heading further south?
It depends. So far, there've been a few hanging around, but they may. If they aren't finding enough food, they may head further south, and then we'll get another wave of them in the late winter as they start heading northwards. Some of the birds that are to our south.
How come now?
Well, it happens in certain years, and this seems to be a very historic eruption. Now, it often happens after a good breeding year. And what happens is that, they have a lot of success. There may be a lot of food around in the Arctic, and the adult owls are able to successfully raise their chicks. Well, at a certain point, they say, well, get out of here, all right? We're done with you. So they chase them out of their territory, and then they fly into the next bird's territory, and it chases it out of its territory, and finally young birds get the idea, and they just keep flying until they don't find any more snowy owls, and then they have to find some open country habitat where they can do some hunting. And it's a tough life for them. They're on their own. They're hunting on their own for the first time. Under natural circumstances, a lot of those birds do not survive.
Wow.
That's their first few years are sort of getting to learn how to be an owl and how to be a predator and where to find food. So. There's a very high mortality rate in those first couple of years of all raptors, but in particular an Arctic long-distance migrant like snowy owls. So in some ways it's a good thing to have a lot of owls coming down because it means they had a good breeding season. But overall, snowy owls are actually in a lot of trouble.
Oh.
They recently were put on the red list of species of global conservation concern. They were listed as vulnerable. They were least concern up before this year, but there's been some precipitous population declines in snowy owls worldwide. Some estimates have said that populations have gone from as many as 100,000 birds to somewhere on the order of 30,000 birds.
Oh.
Just in the last few decades. So near 70% decline over a short amount of time is not a good thing for any species.
I understand they've been seen in numerous places in Connecticut, though, not just Stratford and Milford.
No, they've been, there's been all up and down the coast. There have been some reports pretty much anywhere on the coast. You should keep an eye out for them. There was one in Wallingford. There's been one in Hartford. There's one in New Hartford.
Wow.
There's been one in Bloomfield.
Oh, so inland, too.
Yeah, so it's...
Do they sound different?
Winter. Yeah, they don't... You never really hear them.
You never hear them. They're silent.
at least in our area. They'll make some noises up in the breeding grounds, but not around here.
Huh. Well, aside from the owls, how are things looking generally in your territory of Connecticut for the birds?
Well, we're losing habitat every year here in Connecticut, and
to development.
To development. There's also problems with invasive species, with pests and pathogens. The gypsy moths are really impacting forests quite a bit. So it tends to be hard. You know, you go back every year and you find some place that you used to bird, and the habitat isn't any good there anymore. There's been development or, but you know, some birds are doing okay. Some birds that we're finding more often, particularly birds that are typically further to the south.
Yeah.
Some birds are moving northwards with the warming temperatures, but a lot of the specialist birds are getting harder and harder to find.
I remember last year seeing some remarkable ducks. Did you still see remarkable ducks?
We saw some ducks. It was mostly the common ones. We didn't have that Eurasian widgeon, but we did have we had American widgeon. I think we must have had some long-tailed ducks, some red-breasted mergansers. We didn't have canvasback, which we usually do.
Oh, I remember that was a big deal.
Yeah,
there was
like
a big search for the canvasback.
Yeah, they're usually out on Frash Pond, but this year we didn't have them. We did have northern shovelers. That was a nice treat.
Okay. You know what bird I love that I see at Hammonasset when I'm lucky is the oyster catcher.
Oh, yeah, oyster catchers are a great bird. And that's a bird that both the Audubons in partnership have been working a lot on conservation of over the past few years. And they actually had a record season this year with, I think it was 63 pairs, the most ever recorded for Connecticut. There's still some concern that their productivity levels are very low. That is, they aren't producing many chicks. But it seems to be a good trajectory for both piping plovers and American oyster catchers, which is, you know, hard won. Both organizations hire field staff to go out and to work on conserving them during the summertime, to keep an eye on them, to make sure that their nests aren't getting trampled, and to inform people about them, and educate beachgoers about how to share the shore with the birds. But it seems to be quite a success story so far. When you put the effort in, you get good results.
You know, we only have a few minutes left. I know you have another media obligation. You're like a rock star. And
well, they just canceled.
Oh, they did. Oh, good.
I
okay.
A little bit more time.
I read in my current issue of Audubon Magazine that bald eagles and turkeys both enjoy landfills.
Interesting. Yeah. There's. I guess it depends on what's being thrown away at the landfills, but
it's like a free lunch, is how they put it, like a buffet.
Right. Turkeys like the open habitat that's there, which provides seeds and such, and the bald eagles are mostly a scavenger. So if there's any food waste being thrown away, they'll be there lapping it up. Or if there's a dump where people put deer that may have been hit by cars and things like that, that offers an easy free meal for them as well. It doesn't happen so much around here anymore. Most of our we don't throw the food waste away anymore. It's all of our landfills are closed. We either burn our waste or ship it to other areas. So landfills aren't a really big factor here in Connecticut anymore. But and in some ways you can see that. The gull numbers have really declined in Connecticut.
You love gulls. I remember that.
Yeah, I do. And, it used to be fun to go to the landfill to try and find some of the rare species of gulls that were mixed in. If you could find an Iceland gull or a Glaucus gull or lesser blackback gulls or something really good like a slaty-backed gull, that was a lot of fun. That doesn't happen anymore. And the gull numbers are way down because of that.
Yeah, I just have to giggle because I'm picturing you saying to your significant other, "Hey, let's go to the dump."
Yeah.
That's quite a date. Oh, man. You mentioned deer. I consider it kind of a mixed blessing that lately I'm finding deer at my feeders. They're lovely, but I'm worried about them, you know? Now that you have a job that encompasses more than just birds, maybe you can talk a little bit about the state of deer and whether we should be concerned.
Well, no, I think deer are doing fine for the most part.
Maybe too fine?
Yeah, in some areas of the state, they are causing some damage, and they may, you know, some people will curse the deer that are coming into their yards and eating their plantings.
Right.
And you know, when I was at Stratford Point, we did a lot of landscaping work and put in new plantings, and deer could be a big problem there. That some areas that the deer, there's a very high concentration of deer. Some areas of the state, I understand the hunters are not happy with the numbers of deer, but I think deer are one of our least concerns in terms of their overall conservation concern.
How about the propriety of my putting carrots out for them? Is that a bad thing?
No.
I see from Googling that it's not recommended to feed the deer.
You know, you might not really want to be attracting extra deer to your yard, so they might be eating your landscaping as well.
Okay. So that was just a Christmas treat, deer. Don't get used to it.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you think we ought to know before we let you get on with your real life there at the Audubon?
Well, you can find out a lot more about birds and birding in the state if you check out our website, ctaudubon.org. We have nature centers in Milford and Fairfield, in Glastonbury, in Pomfret. We have a virtual center down at the mouth of the Connecticut River, Roger Torrey Peterson Estuary Center, where we do environmental education programs. And they actually have an office that will be opening up to the public soon. We also have a new center up in Sherman, Connecticut, Deer Pond Farm, which is over 800 acres. It's not open to the public yet, but you can check out our website and sign up for a guided walk of the property led by Connecticut Audubon Society staff. Our Pomfret Center, our Baffling Sanctuary up in Pomfret, is pretty amazing. It's also close to 800 acres and has a lot of grassland and shrubland habitats associated with it. So it's particularly in the, any time of year, it's a great time to visit, but in the breeding season, we have nesting bobolinks and eastern meadowlarks and savannah sparrows, which are pretty uncommon in Connecticut, and it's just an absolutely beautiful place. So check out our website and see how you can get out there and explore nature.
And maybe make a donation.
Yes. You know, we can always use help, and you can rest assured that my primary concern is for birds and the environment. That is what my passion is.
You know, I, as much as I'm happy that you have this new job, I'm also kind of feeling sorry for you because it never ends, right? I mean, there's just always some bad news, something to fight against or for.
Oh, it is a lot of work. I'm very dedicated to it. And you're right. You know, you put out one fire and three other fires are up. But it's all right. You know, it's something I really care about. And at the end of the day, when we have the conservation accomplishments and I'm able to improve habitat. We have a big project down in Westport where we're we got some funding from the Long Island Sound Futures Fund, the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, to do habitat restoration on our Smith Richardson Sanctuary. So we're removing invasive species and then going to be replanting specifically plants that are going to benefit pollinators and birds and other wildlife there. And it's just going to be really amazing. And, you know, when that project's all said and done, that's very gratifying to actually be able to make a difference on the ground and make someplace better for birds and for birding and for butterflies.
Oh, that's just such a perfect positive note to end on. You can be assured of my contribution to the cause, puny as it will be.
Well, thank you so much.
You know.
And I actually just made an online donation to WESU the other day. So
bless your heart. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Patrick, always a pleasure.
Yes, likewise, and looking forward to next year's count.
Right, and maybe we'll talk in the meantime.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is an episode about birds, specifically last December 23rd's Christmas bird count, with two guests who took part in the one in Milford and Stratford, Connecticut. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters. Back in a moment with more bird talk.
This is Mark Silk. I direct the Leonard E. Greenberg Center for the Study of Religion and Public Life at Trinity College, and delighted to be able to say a word on behalf of Reasonably Catholic, which I think is a wonderful show for progressive Catholics. I urge the support for the show, and you should go to the website at WESUFM.org as early and often as you can.
Like a bird on the wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free.
Welcome, Frank Mantlick.
Hello, Maria.
Birder extraordinaire, Patrick calls you.
Well, that's a compliment. Coming from him, that's a nice compliment.
He tells me that you were at this even before he was.
Yeah, I went out for almost 2 hours pre-dawn.
No, I mean in years.
Years. Yeah. I first picked up binoculars to look at birds when I went on a nature walk back in 1972.
Wow.
And I got hooked by the naturalist leader based on all the things he was able to identify and share with us.
Was it in this same area where you're pretty much basing yourself now?
Yeah, well, I live in southwest Connecticut now, and this was a nature walk in Town Ridge Reservation at just over the line in Westchester, New York.
Okay. 1972. Wow.
Yep.
What is it about birds, Frank, before we get into this year's count? What is it about them?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think humans are enamored with the fact that birds can fly on their own without aid of mechanical contraptions.
Yeah.
Plus, many are quite colorful, and or their songs are quite beautiful. I think those three things are probably the main attraction that people have for birds.
Yeah. And additionally, they come in very unusual shapes and sizes.
Yeah, that's for sure.
You know?
Yeah.
I was telling Patrick that I have a special fondness for the oyster catcher, with its long beak, you know, and it just looks like you couldn't make that bird up.
Yeah, very striking, impressive bird.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite?
A favorite?
I know Patrick likes gulls.
Yeah, Patrick's a gull man. For sure. I like shorebirds. Probably among my favorite is the shorebird called the American Avocet.
Oh, isn't your license plate Avocet?
That's my license plate.
Yep. Now it's coming back to me. All right, what is it about the Avocet?
Well, it's a larger short sandpiper shorebird that's basically black and white, but it's got a very long, upcurved bill, black bill that it uses to strain like brine shrimp and things out of the salt marsh shallows.
Yeah.
And it's got sky blue legs.
Huh.
Very long legged shorebird.
That's unusual, isn't it? Sky blue legs.
Yeah. And in breeding plumage, the hood and neck is a wonderful bright orangey color. So it's quite a dashing bird, especially in breeding plumage.
Yeah. There was just nothing this year that was going to keep you from the count, I'm guessing, based on the conditions. that you put yourself in the face of.
Yeah, the weather was quite miserable. It was hovering around freezing and with a cold freezing rain to start and a northeast wind. It's the kind of day that you'd rather not be out. You know, you get chilled, you get damp, you get cold rain in your face, your hands get cold, your binoculars fog up.
Right.
It wasn't bad enough for the organizer, Steve Mayo, to cancel it. I mean, in the past, Christmas bird counts have been postponed because of weather, such as a blizzard or something, you know, which actually the same day, Saturday, an inland count at Bark Hampstead, they decided to postpone because the rain there was freezing, so it was quite treacherous to be out. So they postponed it one day. But along the shore, it started to warm up a little here. It wasn't treacherous, but it was just uncomfortable.
Is it kind of important to do it on the same day every year for statistics' sake?
No, that doesn't really matter. I think part of it is the Christmas bird count season lasts a little more than three weekends, and I think with the, I forget, it's 18 different Christmas bird counts in the state, each year a particular count will hold at either the first weekend, second weekend, or third weekend, so people plan on those general times.
I see.
And then, you know, if changes are made, then it's a lot more work for the compiler to try to round up a whole new crew, cover the area.
You mentioned the compiler. Is there anything we can glean from the count this year about numbers of species?
I don't have the tentative final for this particular Stratford Milford Christmas count. But I'm based on what I know was seen and what I know was missed. I think it's about 95 species, roughly, for this count at this point, which is a little bit low, but I think in large part due to the poor weather.
Mm.
You know, when the weather is nasty, raining, windy, the birds themselves, and you know, the land birds, the passerine species, they tend to lay low and stay in cover and stay dry.
Yeah.
Rather than be out in the open. So I think the weather was a big factor, and perhaps there were fewer people that were able to get out because of the weather as well. So it's always beneficial to have more people out than fewer.
Right.
You know, more pairs of eyes can find more things.
It sounds like you had a pretty good showing, though, considering.
Our territory, yeah, we had about six people in our little territory.
Didn't we have about that many last year?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are hardy souls.
Yeah.
It's great.
And especially considering Patrick and Corey both drove to the coast from inland, and their driveways were a sheet of ice when they left.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. So they definitely...
They get
went
the
above
points.
Beyond the call of duty.
Really? But I guess they just would have been too miserable staying home and missing it, you know? I mean, they
kind of... Yeah, well, it's an event that active bird watchers look forward to every, you know, this time of year.
Yeah.
Definitely a highlight of the birding year to go out and participate on a Christmas bird count.
Before we get into the details of the count, I'm just remembering, you mentioned Corey. What's Corey's role again?
He's with National Audubon Society, the Connecticut chapter, I'll say. And she's, I believe, head of bird conservation.
Okay. That might have been Patrick's former role,
Patrick's former role.
Okay. Well, I remember her mentioning that there are also feeder counts, people counting the birds that come to their feeder on a particular day. And
yep, that's right.
And I'm just kind of thinking about my own feeders and how I wouldn't be able to tell which ones are coming back for seconds and thirds, you know? How do you do a feeder count?
Yeah, a feeder count is welcomed and appreciated as long as the person's feeder is within the count circle. Each Christmas bird count is, I forget what it is, 15-mile diameter circle.
Okay.
So if you live within that circle, then you're feeder count is accountable.
Okay.
If you're outside that, then you're outside the territory.
So let's say I see a chickadee, and
yeah,
it takes a seed and goes to a branch and pecks at it and then comes back. I mean, do I count that as? I mean, how do I know that's one chickadee or two or?
Yeah, you know? Don't. The best way is to keep recounting. Use your peripheral vision and say, oh, there's one over there, there's one over here, oh, there's a third one over there. And just count the maximum you see at any one time. Because, of course, like you say, one individual is going to keep returning for another seed and another seed.
Right.
So you just kind of have to use your peripheral vision and tally the maximum number you see at any one time.
Huh. So at any one time, meaning like in a span of like 5 minutes or something?
Or in a matter of 5 seconds.
Okay. And then
the
maybe
split in and out.
And then shift your attention to a different species.
That's right.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. So, okay, we've got the chickadees. Now let's look for woodpeckers. Oh, all right.
Right.
I see.
Right.
At this moment, I see five.
Yeah, right.
Which would be a good day.
Right.
If you are just joining us, this is an episode about the 2017 Christmas bird count, because birds need a hand and they can't speak English. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from WESU 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters. Back in a moment with more.
Hello, my name is Evelyn Benoit. I listen to Reasonably Catholic because Maria is a friend of mine, and also because I am fascinated by the topics that she brings. It's a variety. It could be from Father John Baptist, who's a 90-plus-year-old passionist priest who's dynamic and full of life and energy, to people from New York and Boston and even other countries that she magnificently finds. And it's just a very enlivening, interesting program. Of course, all these non-commercial programs need support. So if you could possibly send anything, the station can really use the support. And that is WESUFM.org. Thank you for listening.
Back to Stratford and Milford. What for you were the highlights?
To start off, probably bird watching with friends of mine who, you know, are into nature and whatever, who I don't often get a chance to bird with.
Oh, that's so nice.
Shoulder to shoulder, let's say.
Yeah.
We may bump into each other or talk business or whatever, but it's nice to bird with friends. So that's the first thing.
That's an excellent point. It's not just about the birds. It's about the camaraderie of like-minded people who love birds like you do.
Yeah, very much so, yeah. And along those lines, Corey lined up one of the two young people that are fairly new to bird watching. So along the lines of birding with friends, it's also nice to share what we know with young and upcoming birders.
Right. Are you finding that there are enough of those to replace you?
Not really.
No.
But in recent years, there's a little contingent of younger Connecticut birders. They've started their own club called the Connecticut Young Birders Association, I think.
Ah.
And there's about maybe a dozen from around the state.
Okay. Well, you're just going to have to keep at it then, Frank. Come on.
Yeah, that's right.
No retirement for you.
Yeah. It's fun to watch these youngsters full of enthusiasm and very familiar with all the technical aspects of bird ID and everything, and some of them have become quite good at a very young age.
Wow, that's heartening.
Yeah.
So, getting back to the birds then, what ones made an impression on you this year?
Well, certainly we saw three snowy owls, two together, and then we found our own in our own territory. We took a little side detour to Long Beach. There were two in view at the same time along the beach dune. And then later on, we found our own in our very own territory, which we could officially count.
I see.
I mean, I don't know anybody that does not like owls.
Yeah.
And especially snowy owls that come down from the far Arctic.
It's the best.
We wished you there the other day to be with us and share.
I know.
Toys. These owls have been around the area for about a month now.
I hear, yeah. Any other kind of heart-stopping finds?
Well, you know, along Long Island Sound and the mouth of the Housatonic River and all the salt marshes, we get a lot of wintering waterfowl now, water birds, especially as the inland lakes and reservoirs freeze up.
Yeah.
So we were delighted to find two male northern shovelers, which type of a duck. They were over at the Bird's Eye boat ramp. And we had, nearby, we had three green-winged teal, which in the middle of winter are pretty hard to come by. We saw a variety of sea ducks, scoters, and we also had numerous loons, red-throated and common loons. Maybe another highlight was at one of the private marinas, we found two very late black-crowned night herons, which most of those migrate, you know, well south to Florida or whatever, but they were lingering. A couple of us saw a merlin, a couple of falcons. We had a fairly small falcon called a merlin flying over a feeding station.
Wow.
And then later in the day, I spotted a pair of adult peregrine falcons perched high up on the railroad bridge towers over the Housatonic River.
How late did you stay out?
I was out pre-dawn to dusk.
Oh,
so I was
God.
Up from, what was it, 4:30 or so in the morning till about 5 p.m.
Wow. I just don't know what to say. It feels, I'm just, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like a little addiction, you know, the prospect of finding another one and another one.
Well, that's what it is, yeah. Knowing that not a lot of people go out on this particular count to look for owls at night, I felt kind of an obligation living nearby to go out and try for a couple of owls at night. Unfortunately, I was unsuccessful in finding any in an hour and a half of searching.
How do you search at night? You just listen?
Usually, yeah, you listen. You play tape recordings. Nowadays, there's apps for your phone, your smartphone. You can play back calls of owls and hope they respond.
Wow.
Either vocalizing, or sometimes they fly in and land in a tree near you. You can see against the moonlight or whatever.
Why are the snowy owls out and about in the sunshine?
Well, when you think about where they come from, the high Arctic was open land tundra. It's the land of the midnight sun up there, so...
Right.
There's 24 hour light.
Right.
During summer months, so they're used to being active in the daytime. What I find with the birds that come down here this time of year, that winter here, is that during the day, I think they mostly rest, and as night falls, as sun sets, then they get more active and fly around and hunt for ducks and things.
Hmm. Is it bad form to try and tempt birds out of hiding with food?
What do you mean?
I don't know. I don't even know what I mean. Like, I know that owls eat, you know, critters. I mean, if you were to put some field mice in your area, you know, in hopes of tempting them to come, and I mean, would they be even aware of that? I mean, is that something that's done?
Not by the average bird watcher.
Yeah.
Some of the real professional wildlife photographers that try to get, I'll say, an owl in flight, you know, catching a mouse.
Yeah.
I think some of them, probably a minority of them, do use what they call baiting. They release a mouse or whatever in hopes of getting a great picture of, you know, the owl hunting. But it's not something I do.
Yeah.
But I've seen it happen, and usually it happens in places where there's not a lot of bird watchers around to see it.
Oh.
But it's an uncommon practice, but I think with more and more wildlife photographers out there all the time, it's probably on the increase.
Hmm.
It's not something I've seen around here, personally.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're practically out of time. Is there anything you'd like to leave us with regarding the Christmas bird count?
Just that it's a great event. It started back around 1900 as an alternative to people going out and shooting as many birds as they could on Christmas Day. This is a nice social event to go out and try to count as many birds you see in one day. And so it's been going on for well over 100 years. And during that time, definitely trends of bird populations are evident. Some things are increasing, certain things are decreasing.
Yeah, you're really providing quite a service.
Yeah, it's probably the longest running citizen science project ever, you know, worldwide.
Well, may you do it for many years to come.
I'm sure I will be, as long as I'm able.
It's great. Thanks for coming on, Frank. We'll talk again next year.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Bye-bye. That was a visit with Patrick Cummins, Executive Director of the Connecticut Audubon Society, and Frank Mantlick, birder extraordinaire, talking about this year's Christmas bird count. If you missed any of the episode, you can find it posted online tonight at reasonablycatholic.com, reminding you that WESU is a largely listener-supported radio station and that anything you can donate is appreciated. Because Reasonably Catholic Keeping the Faith is celebrating its 5th birthday, I'm asking listeners to give any amount with a 5 in it. You can do so online, where you'll also find our Way Cool thank you gifts at WESUFM.org/pledge. Thanks. Now stay tuned for the Jive at 5, followed by 3 hours of Acoustic Blender with Bill Revel.